Good morning and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Good morning, Ashwini.
Good morning, Chris. Good afternoon.
All right. Good afternoon it is. And actually both, right? So all of the above. So our assignment from yesterday. Can you see how the voices are framing your choices to ensure that you never win? Example. I want to say no, and so I feel bad for being selfish. I have to say yes because otherwise someone who has asked for assistance will not receive it. If I do say yes, I'll be so exhausted that I'll likely take it out on some poor, unsuspecting person and feel bad for being hateful. Either way, I feel bad. Assignments. What are the two choices the voices offer you? Record and listen what you see. All right. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Julian calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Julian.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So many of the examples for this month are voices I feel like I know really well. I have that sort of the tapped out voice of there's nothing left. And then also I think it's something along the line of like good people give all the time voice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just noticing that ping pong match happening a lot for me, particularly in this moment in time where, you know, I'm fielding a lot of phone calls from loved ones and friendships, and just it's a very challenging time, and I feel like people need a lot, or I project that people need a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. That the example is familiar because it's so universal, right, Julian? We all have that conditioning where the good person thing to do is to give and give and give.
Right.
And there's a way in which that perpetuates the sense of the depletion and having to give from deprivation, right?
Right. Yes. Yes.
And and it never leads to, oh, that really means that I need to either find some support for myself or take a time out so that I can replenish those reserves from which I will be able to give again. If anything, just to... It doesn't, you know, it seems like it's I've got to take some time off. But just getting here, just getting to the moment and reconnecting with that infinite source of life energy is sometimes all that is required, right?
I think probably much more often than not, if not always.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing that one of those voices of, well, they need me, that there's ego in that there's this assumption that I somehow have something that they need, some piece of advice, some wisdom, or even just some company. And how a lot of this practice for me has been about really letting go of that and letting people have whatever is theirs. Mm-hmm. Particularly because I have many things that this person needs help with that I get very distracted from actually tending to.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's such an act of courage to recognize that belief and let it go, right? Because it takes such humility to say, okay, well, and it's a very nuanced place, I project, right, Julian? Because it's not that there isn't something you don't have to give. It's just not yours to give. So what we're letting go of is just simply that sense of identification with the giver, right? That's the ego in it, that it's up to me, that there's something I have, that need is something, the absence of something is something I can fulfill.
Right.
And all we're looking at is the construct of that, which is so not true, and letting go the construct of it and getting to the true experience of giving from that place that that is not me.
Yeah. I think I think there's a lot of conditioning around what it means to love someone else, being somehow equated with being always available to them, sort of quote unquote emotionally. Mm-hmm. There's some major karma there that I'm working with, and having what this experience that you're talking about, this real trust in life that if I am present, and just simply there, that is enough.
Mm-hmm. In fact, that's the only portal through which that life force that is you can spill out into the world in offering, right?
Yeah. It's like you spend your whole life learning all the controls and you're like, I can fly this plane. And then you're like, okay, now actually just let go of everything and let it fly itself. That's the work. That's your work, okay?
Let go so that I can be flown, right?
Yeah.
And I project there's so many of us who can relate to that karma of availability is so important. And I project, and that there's a limit on that availability, because we do experience how our limitations, more than we experience our infiniteness, right? Because we're in relationship with and in identification with what limits us more often than we are in identification with the abundance of what we also are.
And
so that's our point of reference to go, oh well, I am required to be available and I'm not available, and not only that, I'm never taking advantage of the universal, you know, that experience of being in relationship to what's always available. And so I don't know myself as infinite. I only know myself as finite.
That's right. Yeah, that's what that experience feels like for sure.
Completely. Yeah.
Well, then just keep getting on the calls and keep doing the practice and keep being reminded of that possibility.
Yeah, exactly, because all it takes is a shift of attention.
Yeah.
Right? Because when you're right there with someone, there isn't an experience of depletion.
That's right. Just when the voices start telling a story about what I need to do or what to say next or how to be or what I've done wrong or whatever.
Or that I can't, you know? To take that as a cue to go, okay, what do I need to do to get back in connection with the infinite so that I don't feel identified with the finite?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Thanks, Julian.
Take care.
Thanks for sharing your experience. Mm-hmm. This is so universal.
Yes.
Thank you, Julian. And Ashwini, a lot in that conversation. And one of the things that was dropping in for me was that, as you two were talking about that, the discrepancy between that projection that conditioning always has of what it is that I'm giving. There always is that sense of that ego knows what that is and how it's so far off from what's actually being given. It's always all about authenticity, and that's actually all we ever have to give is that kind of infinite sense of ourselves, and almost never about the content. Okay, well, let's hear from our next caller. You're now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning. This is Mark from Bellingham.
Hey, Mark.
Well, I heard you say something that has been rattling around with me for some time now, and you made a statement of it's not ours, we don't own it.
Uh-huh.
And when it comes to giving, that's kind of where I'm at. I consider myself a caregiver to anything this human happens to come in possession, as opposed to owning it, as to making it mine.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think our conditioning in our society has a whole lot of input into getting us to believe that we do own things. You know, we own houses, we own cars, we own computers. The computers are registered online as us being the owner. And so I've been kind of looking at, you know, where is this ownership thing in this human's life?
So you don't have, if I'm tracking, Mark, you don't have a sense of necessarily ownership. You have a sense of stewardship. This is in my life to take care of. And so if it's in my life, that is my my responsibility or my response to that thing. And so the exploration for you is, where is that nuance of it belongs to me coming from, expressing itself in your life?
Oh, from all around.
So despite having that sense, that genuine, authentic response to something, you still see ownership in other in places.
Well, I think it's built into our society. I think it's built into our educational system. It's built into our legal system. It's built, you know, it's it is our conditioning, I think.
So you're seeing how it's imposed in our language and in our institutions and in our orientation inherently. It's just not necessarily our experience.
Exactly. And it's not something that it's something that kind of shows up everywhere. It's not like, it's almost like the process is the same. There's no change. And again, it's if I am in ego, with ego, then that is a static, no change environment. When I'm present, it's all different and it's always changing.
So let me see if I can...
Which to me is more, which is more preferable.
Of course, right? So when we're here, it's always, it's always infinitely better than not being here, being
much
identified
more
and gone with ego.
Yeah, right.
Much more interesting and fascinating and enjoyable. And what I what I hear you saying is, you recognize that when we switch to conditioning, we just switch to conditioning's orientation. And so there isn't an inherent belief in its mind. It's just simply that you're identified with a process that habitually stakes out that ownership.
Right, right. And it's that place where it's the place where I have the willingness to either come back to presence or not.
That's interesting.
That's where my choice is. That's where the free will steps in and gives me a choice to be with or not be with life.
So the real choice being where the attention is, right? Am I attending to that process where the world is all about ownership and me and mine, or am I here where I am responsive to the orientation of life, which where everything is of life, and my I'm tuned to how I steward it. It is very interesting, right? Because we get
it's fascinating
every moment.
It is it's not something that just happens three times a day. All right, very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. And Swinny, with that, there was just really struck by that notion that what a completely different experience it is to be able to give from stewardship as compared to be able to give from a sense of ownership.
It's so different.
And that in the one, so like with ownership, it's just clear how easy it would be for conditioning to push us into a duality. If I think I own it and have something to give, then you know, I can get into that conversation of all of those conversations we talk about. Does the person deserve it? Can I afford to give it? Right? And just endless conversations. And from a place of stewardship, then it seems like that is way more in that vein of what's most compassionate for all, includes the giver, and what's being given, and kind of the whole shoot and match. So.
Yeah. I think you're pointing us to the fact, right, Chris, is once we step into the conditioned world, then all of the structures become of the conditioned world are also created, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, all the dualities arise in that moment, and mm-hmm. and then we can be caught in that web. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Best to stay out of it, right?
Best to stay out of it. I like that plan. All right, let's. Check in with our next caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Ashwini. It's Patty from Vancouver.
Hi, Patty. What are you seeing? About bad choices that are
Well, the giving that I'm looking at is the giving of myself to practice, to being present, to life, mm-hmm. and seeing where conditioning and ego stop me from doing that. And it kind of all started with the compassionate scheduling and how I have some conditioning around evenings and weekends not being a place of practice or sort of relaxing and not paying attention or something. And part of that is years of conditioning of my partner working during the day, so evenings and weekends I make myself available. So it's about a little bit like the first caller was talking about, making myself available, sort of I'm selfish if I don't, but when my time is my own, it's not selfish to practice. So the selfless, selfish part comes into play.
Well, and it's so fascinating when you lay it out like that, right, Patty? Because it has got nothing to do with practice.
No.
Right? Because,
exactly.
I mean, what we're doing is practicing being present. And so we can be present in the evening, and we can be present on the weekend,
exactly.
and we can be present in relationship. It just reveals how we're controlled by those words of selfish and selfless and circumstances, and how the whole thing is constructed out of a set of unexamined beliefs.
Right. And similarly, the being available, you know.
That is so, it's so, the only word that keeps coming up is so constructed, right?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with how it is. It's just how we think it is.
Yeah. And I saw in part of my investigation this month, a voice of my mother who said, you should be there for your husband, you know, her 1950s ideas of what a wife is, you know, and very interesting.
Yeah, that our conditioning, we can see our conditioning in that.
Yeah.
How the conditioning organizes life into the dualistic perspective that Chris was talking about, right? What it means to give, what it means to be available, where I could give to myself, where I could give to someone else. And
then
until we do something like this, we can't actually see how actually absurd it is.
Yeah, and then the judging that comes up when I don't do what conditioning says, it just keeps it in place.
And the resentment I project that you're required to give up all evenings and all weekends to
someone
right? And be 100% available when you might want to do something else.
Yeah.
That's important to you.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at dropping it, Mm-hmm. Again, it's that same sense of spaciousness of, you know, I can be available to myself at any time. You know, it's not based on these ideas.
Exactly. And when we really stop to think about that statement, that we move to that place of, I'm available. It's so hard to say without bringing the personal pronoun in, right? That there's an availability to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Which is sort of the ultimate identification, which makes me available to me and available to everyone else in my life,
right,
in the only way availability is, right?
Right, right, right. In that bigger sense of it all.
In the bigger sense of it all, where it's all inclusive, right? It's not divided up. It's there's no separation.
Yeah. Mhm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And Patty, you know, I think it's so important for us to go through this process of the specifics of how we are controlled around giving, right, or our beliefs around giving, in order to sort of surrender all of it to an experience of that larger context that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The larger context we're talking about being being in life,
being
a bigger sense of things and connected and Well, thank you for this daily practice and the framework that helps me to see these things that maybe I haven't seen before, and it's wonderful.
Thank you for being part of it.
Thank you. Gasho.
Gasho, go happy.
Thank you, Patty. And one thing that was dropping in for me, Ashwini, is in all these conversations, it seems like ego's goal in all of this is to get us in a place of deprivation and then require us to give, that's just a source of so much suffering.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. I think you just nailed it, Chris.
Kind of endlessly, and, you know. So, like we said before, it's helpful to know that there's a powerful antidote out there, right? Dropping the conversation. And, once we're out of that place of deprivation, then it just becomes so clear that if I need to say no, it's easy to say no in terms of, you know, I can adjust the what's being given, how it's being given, all those circumstances to, or those things to whatever the circumstances are, and there just doesn't need to be any residual to it or conversations about it.
Yeah, well, that's an entire topic in itself, right? The saying no part of it. There's so much conditioning around that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we always say yes to life. That's an interesting context in which to consider that no, right? Because I think what you're pointing to is it's always appropriately calibrated.
Exactly.
We're never asked for something that we cannot give.
Yeah, exactly. So in that sense, it's not a no because we're calibrated with life, as you're saying. And so it's a yes to life, but life has this to offer in this moment. And there it is. Conditioning might come in and judge that as, well, that's not enough. But, All right, let's... from our next caller. Next caller, you're now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Ashwini and Chris, this is Eleanor in Georgia.
Hey,
Hi. So I think what I've been looking at is, let's see, a different way that I get caught in the conversation about this, and it's so the steps I've been looking at in the last few months are where I get told I should do something. This pressure to do something, there's that do in there, right? And then I don't know enough to do it, and I start trying to, you know, the whole conversation, figure it out, and then overwhelm, and so then I'm caught in that place. And in this content, it seems to be the same thing, of course.
Yeah, pressure and overwhelm, right?
Yeah, and that's yeah. and that pulled me out. But it's this side of the line that got me on the first focus day was that I guess the story I am told is that I should feel really bad if everybody doesn't have what they need, and that why do they not have much and I should be able to help them, and and then it goes into the whole story of, you know, there's something big wrong with everything. Right.
Right. So that's a good way to see how the process is set up. The process of suffering is set up for you, right? That everybody should have what they need, and the fact that they don't is an awful circumstance that there's something wrong with. And so you are responsible for filling the gap. Right.
Right. That's not much pressure, right?
Yeah, it's like, okay, Eleanor, the entire world's misery is yours right. to solve for.
Right.
And of course, you don't know how, and you've got to. And yeah, I project that overwhelm is such a place of suffering and paralysis, right?
Right. And, you know, and it just what came in was that it's the same thing as just struggling with other people suffering on an individual, personal, you know, basis. Like somebody's having an emotion, and then it's the same kind of process. Mm-hmm. I jump in there that I'm responsible and should be able to do something about
it. Right. And I remember this wonderful open air call that Sherry had with someone where in that place, what's really going on is I'm suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because all I'm experiencing is what's happening for me, and we project that it's the suffering of someone else, and then we abandon where we can actually do something about it in the vain attempt to have somebody have a different experience.
Right, exactly. Right. So it's just the whole projection. Ego's imagining that that's how they would feel, and that's really how I feel.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Certainly seen that, yes.
Yes, so. And it really deflects the action, right? Because you can't do anything about anyone else, and therefore, because you're distracted, you won't do anything about the human you can save, and so the suffering just gets perpetuated.
Right. And when I usually come, a lot of times I come to awareness in the place of, those first few steps, I often don't catch, and I come to awareness in a place of of not knowing what to do, of being it's like I guess it's not even inadequacy, it's a young I want to do the right thing, but I don't know what to do, and I'm in trouble if I don't. So that's the place that sometimes I get all the way to there before I realize it. So at that point, the choice now it's becoming clearer to see, oh, I got here again. I know how I got here, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe then I can have some clarity on letting go, because there's certainly no value in, some clarity on taking care of this human, and there's no value in.
I love that, right, Eleanor, because there's no, if you weren't watching your process, you couldn't lay it out so clearly, right? So here's how it begins, that practice of watching the process and putting it down as a process map is something that's what we practice with. That's why we watch our process within quotes, right? And so the awareness arrives at this place of feeling confused, I would project, of not knowing what to do. But in that moment of awareness, it's not confusion, but clarity. Oh, now I have clarity that what I'm in is in the conditioned process.
Wow, it is.
I don't have to work out what I need to know. All I need to know is the awareness that I don't need to be part of this process. And I can turn to life to go, okay, well, what is it that the clarity of this moment is offering me now?
Wow, it is. It really is. Confusion, just clarity. I mean, just
the
like
clarity
that.
Of being confused allows us to get here and have the clarity of the now, right?
Right. And by seeing that, then there's that's the turning the attention that way, and rather than that old way of getting beat up for being confused.
Yeah, and then we can be there for that person, or reflect that person, or listen to that person, or just be for that person the gift that the guide always says, the experiential knowledge of there's nothing wrong. And that is really compassion, right?
Right, there is. To see it and know that that's what it is. Yeah, that it's... Yeah, thanks. Oh, boy.
Well, thank you. That was fascinating.
It is. Yes, definitely. Yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks, Eleanor.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Eleanor. And fascinating indeed, Ashwini.
Yes, indeed.
And it does seem that's what we train for, you know, those moments where we know there's clarity there, we're aware of that clarity, and we're still in the condition process to just hang in with that clarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Yeah, it's a true moment of awareness.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. And here is our assignment for today. What possibilities might be available if you dropped out of ego's either-or framing of the issue? Record and listen to what you see. Mm. All right. Very good. Onward and upward.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Ashwini. Take care, everyone.
Go happy.
Go happy.